With the 13th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a combine edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. I'm Chris McPherson, joined here inside the hotel room in downtown Indianapolis with Fran Duffy.
Our makeshift studio.
Exactly. It's how it happened. Basically, you come to Indianapolis, okay? You go through a day of press conferences with the prospects. We heard from Eagles head coach Doug Peterson earlier today, from executive vice president of football operations Howie Roseman, and then later in the afternoon. And at 6 o'clock, they clear out the media center at Lucas Oil Stadium. They tell you, get out. So we're still writing. We're still editing video at that point. So we try to wrap things up as quickly as we can. But we decided to just do the podcast to wrap everything up at the hotel. So
here we are.
You know, you don't want to know what Fran is wearing at this point.
You got to leave some to the imagination.
Exactly.
That's why this isn't a video podcast.
That's very scary, to say the least. An amazing show. Very excited to be out here. You know, this is, I feel like, the time when the most casual fans will get into the draft process because you'll talk to a lot of people, and people who maybe aren't even diehard fans of the NFL offseason, but they'll say every February they're on their couch watching the combine. You know, they're just inundated with watching essentially the track and field competition for what it's worth. But for whatever reason, you know, this last weekend of February, they're stuck glued to their TVs, watching the NFL Network, watching NFL.com, checking out all the prospects, running the 40-yard dash, doing the vertical jump, broad jump, all that good stuff. So this is when things really get going. And even the teams, you know, you hear from just about every team here at the Combine from a media standpoint. And even the coaches are telling you this is when they're really getting fully invested into the process. So this is when things really start to ramp up. An amazing show. Fran Duffy is going to go one-on-one with head coach Doug Peterson. I haven't heard the interview yet. I'm excited to check it out. I knew the questions that he had worked on to try to get himself ready for the interview. I don't know how the final product turned out, but you will all find out along with myself in a few moments. We'll get into the latest headlines in Draft Buzz. Our pick six, since the first day of media availability, feature the offensive line and running backs. The pick six players to watch who would fit the Eagles from an offensive line standpoint. Obviously, a big position group to watch this offseason. Our game tonight, or on the clock, is going to be a Would You Rather featuring the running backs. Good questions here from Fran. Our unofficial visit will be one of the players featured in our pick six, so we'll leave that for a little bit later in the show, and then your questions in our draft mailbag. So again, thank you very much for listening, consuming the podcast, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, Podbay, whatever. Make sure to rate and comment and let us know what you want to hear on the podcast moving forward. But up first, Fran, you're one-on-one with Doug Peterson. Anything to tease it, or you just want to get right into
it? No, let's get right into it.
Okay, our unofficial visit, our Mr. Relevant tonight, Doug Peterson.
It's time for Mr. Relevant.
Here now with Eagles head coach Doug Peterson. And coach, it's your first combine here as a head coach. You get to speak with the media for the very first time. Very first time here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. How's it feel to be here at Lucas Oil Stadium?
I'm excited. You know, first combine, obviously, as the head coach, as you mentioned, and to look down here to see Radio Row it can be intimidating, but I'm looking forward to this opportunity. You know, again, it's where sort of the league year kind of kicks off, you know, here with the combine, and get a chance to watch these kids perform and get a chance to meet them a little bit with the interview process. So I'm looking forward to it. Again, been a part of it, you know, as a coordinator and as a position coach, but I'm sure it'll be a little more fun and exciting as a head coach now.
Well, that was what I wanted to ask you. What is the biggest difference for you going in here as a head coach now compared to when you're a coordinator or as a quarterbacks coach?
Well, the biggest difference is you're you obviously got to stay here the entire time.
Sure.
You're looking at both sides of the ball,
yeah.
Along with kickers and punters as well. So, you know, you're not just limited offense or defense. You take in everything. And again, you get to know both sides of the football, and that's probably the biggest difference now being the head football coach.
What is the daily grind? You know, I think fans, they see the combine as kind of a glorified, you know, hey, they come out, they run the 40, and they meet some, you know, meet some coaches, meet the teams at night. What is the daily grind like for a head coach?
You know, it's a lot of, you know, it's media obligations. There's some meetings this week, different things that you got to do, some obligations that way. Still early mornings, you know, with some of the measurements and the weigh-ins and things that you get a chance to be a part of. And then, and obviously towards the end of the week, you get to see them, you know, inside the dome workout. So, you know, those routines are still going to stay the same, but I think, you know, this part of it, the media side, is probably the biggest change.
Sure. What has been the hardest part? Obviously, you've been on the job now for a few weeks, trying to juggle the new installs and putting everything in for schematically. Obviously, you can't do it with the players yet, but then also looking at the roster, looking at the free agents and coming up with the plan, looking at the draft prospects. How hard has it been to juggle all of that?
Well, it's, you know, time management. You know, something that Howie and I, we communicate daily on our free agents, you know, looking forward to the draft and obviously the combine here. You know, plus on top of that is putting in our offensive structure, and then Coach Schwartz putting in the defensive structure, and, you know, having time to teach the offensive coaches, you know, the system. So yeah. There's a balance there. Time management becomes critical. But at the same time, you know, it's football. Bottom line is football. And my relationship with Howie and communicating on a daily basis has really helped that.
And getting back to the football side of it, and you get out here and you meet all these different prospects. You see them all work out. How much of it is finding out what a player can do for your team, and then also what a guy can't do? Is it a little bit of both, or one more than the other?
Well, you know, out here you can kind of see his physical, the measurements, you know, the stuff you see with the eye.
Yeah.
You know, 15 minutes in an interview is not enough time to get to know a player.
Yeah.
And until you really get them into your building and on your football team. You know, so you really rely on your scouts and your personnel department to give you as much background on these players as possible. But, you know, at the end of the day, can they or can they not play football? And that's what you're looking for.
Sure. And then you mentioned the interview process. Obviously, it's tough. You can't get too much out of that 15-minute window. Are you almost trying to get one specific or two specific items out of that interview, or do you want to just try and paint as big a picture as possible?
Try to paint as big a picture as possible. But yeah, but then again, you want to capture that one moment, that one maybe a phrase or a word. If you're talking about his offense or defense, you know, how much does he know? Is he a technician? Is he just kind of just know the structure of the defense or the offense? You know, but can he dive into it? You know, especially with quarterbacks, you want to be able to see how much they know. But at the same time, you're trying to paint with a broad stroke and try to get a big picture of how this person would fit into your organization.
And then during your time with the Eagles, obviously you've been to a number of different combines. Has there been any interviews with the kind of former or current Eagles that stand out in your mind? I remember when we met, you know, Nick Foles or whoever the quarterback was, or any of the other players you've met here in Indy.
Yeah, you know, I remember, you know, of course Nick was a great interview. You know, and then having a chance to go over and talk with Andrew Luck, you know, I talked to him. We didn't have a formal with him, but I had a chance to, on an informal basis, sit down with him. Guys like Cam Newton, you know, some quarterbacks that way that were dynamic guys that you knew were going to have successful careers in the National Football League. And even though we weren't going to be in a position as a team to draft that high, still being able to talk to those guys and get a feel for them. Because you never know. One day they're going to become a free agent and down the road. You always want to go back to those times and remember those times and you know, understand exactly who that person is.
Well, Coach, thanks very much, and best of luck here in Indianapolis. And thanks for joining us here on the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, friend, as we're recording this, I still have not listened to the interview yet, so I can't, you know, give you fake applause for...
Take my word for it. It was good.
There we go. So I'll look forward to listening to it later on. Our draft buzz, we'll start off with the column from our good friend Tony Pauline of DraftInsider.net, who drops some amazing nuggets each and every Monday, and definitely some great ones leading into Combine Week. And one of them was about an offensive line prospect from Michigan State, Jack Conklin, who has been pegged to the Eagles in a variety of mock drafts at the number 13 overall selection. So Jack Conklin, the big question with him is, can he play left tackle? There are some concerns in the draft community among some scouts and personnel executives. Obviously, the testing drills that will take place later in the week will play a big role into it. But regardless, how do you see Jack Conklin projecting to the next level?
Yeah, I think Conklin is a really intriguing player. Obviously, has played at a very high level for Michigan State over the past couple of years. Has been a long time starter with the Spartans. Has played left tackle. He started his career at right tackle. Played there as early as 2013. A really interesting player. I think his competitive toughness, you know, his grit, his demeanor, his nastiness inside is really the strength of his game. And I think that's really where you see him be most effective. He uses his hands well. You know, I don't think he's the most explosive kid. We'll get to see him run later this week. But, you know, that's obviously not a really important trait for an offensive lineman. I think that his athleticism, his balance is a little bit underrated. I think some people have questioned that. And one of the plays that I always think of, and it's interesting because it's not an offensive line play.
Okay.
But I think back to an interception that Connor Cook threw, not this past season, but in 2014 against Oregon. Connor Cook threw an interception. Corners bring it back down the opposite sideline, down the right sideline for the offense. Jack Conklin tracks the corner down and just torpedoes him into the sideline. And it was a really athletic play for an offensive tackle, a guy who came in, you know, what did he come in today? Over 315 pounds. Being able to track down a small defensive back, break down, and tackle the guy, a moving target in space, was just a really impressive athletic play. I like Conklin. I think it's really, you know, a guy that is a very interesting player on the offensive line throughout this process. And the other big thing for him today was he went through the measurements, came through with 35-inch arms, and which is, you know, typically for an offensive tackle, you want a guy who's got at least 33. That's the benchmark. If it's below 33 inches, you're really not looking at a guy that's going to play tackle. You're probably going to shift him inside to guard. 34 inches is long. 35 inches is very long. And he came in. It was in the top 10 of the offensive linemen recorded today. 35-inch arms. And now there's no question whatsoever. He can play tackle. Now it's going to be a matter of, do you think he's a left tackle? Do you think he's a right tackle? I think that he can play left tackle in the league.
Fran has 37-inch arms. For the
record.
Yeah,
for the record. That's right.
Exactly. Interesting that the Leadership Council at Michigan State, which is kind of like the group that you know, was used for the coaching staff to kind of bounce ideas off players, was called the Eagles.
I did not know that.
Believe it or not. So
interesting.
So he was, and Conklin was a part of that Leadership Council. Another interesting note, Lance Zierlein, a good friend from NFL.com, the pro comparison for Conklin is former Eagle John Runyon.
Interesting. So very interesting.
Runyon, obviously a stalwart at right tackle. Don't know if that portends. That means that Conklin will be right tackle, but nonetheless, an interesting comparison. Former walk-on at Michigan State.
That's
didn't
right.
have any FBS offers coming out of high school. Was a preferred walk-on, earned a scholarship, and you know, goes on to earn illustrious honors during his Spartans career.
Now, he was a second-team All-American this year, and like I said, he's been holding it down on the left side now for the past two seasons for Michigan State, and a really impressive player.
All right, next up, we'll stick along the offensive line. Is it true, Fran? I think you pointed out to me that the University of Arkansas offensive line is bigger size-wise than any line, not just in college football, but the NFL as well.
This has been a Brett Bielema special. Because you can remember when Russell Wilson was coming out and everyone was making a big deal about his height. And he said, look, I'm used to playing in front of a big offensive line. Our line at Wisconsin is bigger than anybody in the college and in the NFL.
Where Bielema was at the time.
He goes down to Arkansas and he recruits that kind of player. Those are the kinds of players that he puts in. And you talk about Denver Kirkland, the guard. You talk about, he was a left tackle. A lot of people see him as a guard in the NFL. And then you look at Sebastian Tritolo, the offensive guard that we saw down at the Senior Bowl as well. Both those guys are in the 330-pound-plus range, are just big physical maulers. He likes those offensive. He has a type on the offensive line, and that's the type.
So Denver Kirkland checked in as the heaviest offensive lineman at 335 pounds. Any other noteworthy measurements from your estimation? As this morning, Senior Bowl, I know it's a big thing. You actually sit and watch the weigh-ins, correct?
Sure. Yes, correct.
So at the Combine, we actually, Fran and I just go not literally through the actual weigh-ins as they're taking place, but we just go through, just walk on stage, you know, 6'3", 205 pounds. but we walk through that room where they're having the weigh-ins at, just ahead to the media center where we spend the morning. But certainly all eyes are on, you know, certain guys from a measurement standpoint. So were there anyone you mentioned, you know, Conklin with the arm length, were there any who maybe helped their cause, or were there any whose stock might drop a little bit because they don't have the certain measurements that most teams will want from an NFL standpoint?
You know, I think that really the most important thing from an offensive line perspective is that arm length. And, you know, a lot of people will point to the weight, and that is a big thing. There were seven guys that came in under 300 pounds, and that'll be a concern a little bit. But I think a lot of players typically will come to the combine a little bit lighter. You know, they're doing the agility test. They're doing the 40. That's not as important for the offensive lineman. But they're doing a lot of these agility tests. They want to be able to time well. So they're going to come in a little bit lighter than what you'll see them at once they play. But I think that when you look at arm length, that's really a big thing that you're trying to figure out. And most of these teams have numbers on a lot of these players. But, you know, you start to see, okay, we talked about that 33-inch benchmark. Who didn't make that benchmark that a lot of people are seeing as potential tackles at the next level? Cody Whitehair did not make that benchmark.
Interesting.
You know, you look at Joe Thuney, who played tackle at NC State. A lot of people see him as a guard. He did not make that benchmark. Max Turk, the center from USC, did not make it. Mm. You know, there are other players that, you know, played outside. Is there a potential to play at tackle at the NFL that didn't make it? You know, some of those other guys just made it. You know, you look at Willie Beavers, he just made it at 33.5. You know, Alex Redmond from UCLA has played some tackle, played some guard, 33.25. Cole Toner, the kid from Harvard, 33.125. So, you know, some of these players just made that borderline there for 33 inches, and that's going to be a cutoff for a number of different teams. So it's interesting just to be able to follow that and see how some of these guys stacked up.
What's interesting, I saw this on Twitter during the day, was that some guys had different measurements at the combine than at the Senior Bowl.
Yep.
I'm not talking height, weight. I mean, weight obviously is something that's going to fluctuate, but things like the hand width, arm length. I mean, these are things that
are big things, right?
Huge things. In fact, I was reading, I forget which prospect I was reading about, but he was getting, it was a quarterback prospect. I think it was a Bruce Feldman from Fox Sports article. It was a quarterback prospect who was getting hand massages to try to relax the hands so you can get, you know, above, what's it?
Typically it's nine inches is the number he's trying to get to.
So to try to get, make sure that he surpassed that benchmark, so to speak. So, you know, it's crazy in some regards that little bit is going to make all the difference in the world. I was actually listening to another good podcast. It was Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah,
sure,
Bucky Brooks, from the guys from NFL Network, and they were kind of talking about why, you know, Laquon Treadwell isn't going to run the 40-yard dash, and they say obviously because, you know, if he's expected to run fast, he's not going to run fast at the combine. It's going to be the big storyline. It's going to knock him down, and everyone will be there. Everyone from the NFL will know that he ran, say, a 4.6, whatever, 40. But if he goes to his pro day and he runs a 4.6, 40, not everyone's going to be there. And if he's someone that you're banging the table for, maybe you can fudge the number. It's like maybe the scout who was on hand just was slightly off.
Yep,
and
there's no laser time.
You know, and, you know, maybe even if he's a 4.59, you can say, well, he's a 4.5 guy.
Right.
You can say, it's easier to stomach than if it happens in Indy in front of everyone, and everyone in the world knows that you ran a 4.6.
And I hate going back to this comparison, but the same exact thing happened with Alshon Jeffrey coming out of South Carolina, and he's a player that has been compared to Treadwell numerous times.
Yep.
Mike Mayock compared Treadwell to Jeffrey on his conference call earlier this week. You know, I think that they're very similar players in a lot of different ways. The weight fluctuation, and now you talk about the 40-yard dash, and, you know, Tony Pauline reported last week on our site, you know, it said that his people would be happy with a 4.55. Now, there was an issue with Treadwell that Tony actually brought up, is that very late in the process, during Senior Bowl week, he switched agents and then also switched training facilities because he switched agents. So there was a lot of time where he spent going in between places, didn't get to spend as much time training, and they're saying that's why he's not running. So it'll be very interesting to see when he does run at the pro day what that number is.
Certainly. So next up here, getting back to the O-line, Cody Whitehair, player just talked about. He has been another player who earlier in the process, you know, there were mock drafts linking him to the Eagles with that 13th pick. Apparently, the Eagles are showing a lot of interest. He was asked specifically about the Eagles, and he said that he's spoken with the team pretty quite often. Another note that came out today said that some teams have discussed moving him to center at the next level. Your thoughts on Whitehair, who we're talking about going from tackle to guard. Is he someone who you think maybe slides all the way inside to center?
Yeah, I think that Whitehair, to me, is a top five lineman in the class overall. Now the question is do you value a guard that high? Do you think he's one of the 13 best players in the class? Where is he going to end up? Where is he going to end up slotted? That's a good question. And we talked about the arm length. I think that's going to limit him from being a starting offensive tackle. Like, doesn't mean he can't play there. We've seen lots of tackles play at that spot, maybe not at the most effective level. But I think that Whitehair is a really good player in terms of his sneaky athleticism, and we're going to see how well he's going to test this week. I think he'll test better than some people think. I think he anchors really well, and that's really the strength of his game is his core strength, his anchor strength. I think that his ability to lock onto defenders, he's got that vice grip. Remember we talked about that so often with Evan Mathis when he was here, which is just his hand strength. I think Whitehair, that's a strength of his game as well. So, you know, I really like Whitehair. The question is you know, how do you see him? We went down to the Senior Bowl day one, and I know that there were four quarterbacks on each team, so they needed some people to get reps at center. Whitehair was one of those players who got reps at center. So not surprising to see some people approach him about that position switch as well.
So he's played both tackle and both guard positions
Yes.
at the college level, so and had a lot of success there with the Wildcats. We're going to take a look at a mock draft. There's a bunch obviously coming out. This is prime mock draft season. And a lot more to get to in the show, so we'll just get to one here for today. And Lance Ierlein, we talked about him a few moments ago. His mock draft, he has the Eagles selecting a quarterback, and most have been saying Paxton Lynch. I think even Mike Mayock said during his conference call that he could project Paxton Lynch as a fit for the Eagles at number 13. Well, Lance Ierlein has Carson Wentz going to that spot. So one of the big things about this year's draft class is going to be when it comes to the quarterback evaluations. Certainly the quarterbacks get pushed higher every year. Always talk about that. But how high are they going to go in this year's draft class? You know, there's people who think Wentz is the best quarterback prospect. And certainly I don't think you're waiting until 13 for the first quarterback to come off the board. You know, Jared Goff in that conversation. Paxton Lynch will be in the conversation.
Yep.
But it's just, where will the dominoes fall with the quarterback position? Is this a year where we're surprised and teams, you know, take them earlier than maybe some expect? Or is this a year where, okay, maybe Goff goes two to Cleveland, but then after that, maybe it's a waiting game, and maybe the Eagles will have their pick of the next tier guys at 13 if they – decide to go in that direction.
And Lance has Paxton Lynch going at 7 to San Francisco. You know, so he's got Wentz falling into the lap. I know Alex Smith would be jumping for joy at the Novacare Complex if that were to happen.
Be careful driving in your car, Alex, if you're listening to this on your way to work.
Yeah.
So,
you know, Wentz is obviously a very, very intriguing player. We talked about him a ton down at the Senior Bowl. I'm a big fan of Carson Wentz. So I think that would be a really exciting pick. You know, if they decide to go in another direction away from Sam Bradford, Carson Wentz is certainly a name that would excite a lot of people in the Philadelphia area.
Well, we've talked about this already on the podcast previously, Fran. Could you do whatever with Sam Bradford? Franchise, transition tag, whatever, lock him up for this year. Maybe you reach a short-term contract, a couple years, but you still draft a quarterback.
Could, yeah. It's no question. I wouldn't rule anything out. So it wouldn't surprise me at all.
You know, Doug Peterson, when he was talking with the media, was asked about the quarterbacks, and was asked specifically about Washington's situation in 2012, where they took RG3 and Kirk Cousins, and, you know, turned out Cousins is the one who appears to be the guy who's going to be their solution at quarterback, and maybe RG3 is a tradable asset for the team. You know, you look back when the Eagles were regularly drafting quarterbacks, even though they had Donovan McNabb, you know, they got AJ Feely and were able to flip him for a second-round pick. You saw the boatload of assets they were able to get in return for Kevin Cobb a couple years back. It's both he and Howie Roseman spoke about they need to get the pipeline going. You know, you got to kind of feed that, whether you're talking about your first-string quarterback or down to your third- or fourth-string quarterbacks. You need to get additional guys into the pipeline. So it seems like that you're going to see a different approach from the Eagles regarding quarterbacks this year, that they're going to be more aggressive in trying to make sure that no matter what happens with Sam Bradford, they're going to be trying to address, to continue to address that position.
Yeah, and I think that it's really not just at the quarterback position, but it's always about developing talent. And that's the interesting part about this, you know, this process that we're in right now of, you know, evaluating talent. But then also, once you acquire that talent, developing it and, you know, and trying to make those prospects into players and turn those players into assets, whether they're for your team or for another team, that you can then flip it and try and acquire more picks to acquire more assets. And that's what it's all about, is trying to collect as much talent as possible. And, you know, I thought that both Doug and Howie brought it up in terms of the quarterback position. Both talked about it in the offensive line. Howie brought up a good point at his press conference that, yeah, the Eagles have not drafted an offensive lineman since Lane Johnson. But from 2001 to 2013, they drafted more offensive linemen than any team in the NFL.
Yeah.
They were a huge proponent of, you know, of building through the offensive line, and that's something that is a priority for them. So it'll be very, very intriguing to watch moving forward.
You mentioned quarterback development. You look at the coaches on the roster. Doug Peterson played. Frank Reich played, offensive coordinator. And John DeFilippo has extensive experience developing quarterbacks. So three great guys right there alone, and able to obviously look at the position and be able to develop it. I also was fascinated by Peterson talking about the traits he looks for in a quarterback.
Yeah.
And we were walking back from the media room at Lucas Oil back to the hotel and talked about win-loss record. You know, obviously the physical aspects, the mental toughness, but then the confidence, does he have the ability to command the huddle, is going to be big. And then the intelligence factor, how is he on the whiteboard? But the fact that he brought up the win-loss record, it's kind of intriguing, because you figure sometimes that's just not, you know, if the team is just not good enough around him, maybe it's not something the quarterback can overcome. Maybe Peterson thinks that's not true. Maybe Peterson thinks that if your quarterback is good enough, you can win. Maybe not regardless of the talent around you, but if you have comparable talent around you, you should be able to take your team to the next level.
Yeah, and that certainly is a very interesting discussion to have. And it's always great hearing, you know, all these decision makers talking about the traits that they look for, and that was certainly an interesting discussion.
All right, so that's going to do it for Draft Buzz. Now let's go into pick six, six players that we think the Eagles would be looking at potentially along the offensive line.
Now it's time for pick six.
All right, friend, I'll take the honors and start things off here with pick six. And first, I'm going to go at the tackle position along the offensive line. Again, we're looking at six players, six offensive line prospects who we think will fit the Eagles. And I'm going to go to Indiana, tackle Jason Spriggs. Tough, smart, and athletic. Played in a spread offense there for the Sooners. Good lateral agility. Was a four-year starter. A team captain. Started as a true freshman. Now, going through your notes on him, you know, you've noted that on some plays he looks like a left tackle in the NFL, and some plays you're like, who is this guy going to be? Is he draftable? So obviously needs to be more consistent. But from the athletic standpoint, from a guy that, you know, can play left tackle, I think he's a guy who would be a potential fit for the Eagles there.
Yeah, and I thought that he had a really good week down at the Senior Bowl and got better each day. So definitely an intriguing player, and I think a guy that's going to test really well this week too. So excited to see that. My first guy will be LaRaven Clark, the tackle, another guy we saw down at the Senior Bowl. Outstanding frame. And I think watching this guy, I really like what he could become, and I think some offensive line coaches are going to absolutely drool over him because he's got outstanding size. He's got lighter feet than you'd expect for that size. All of his issues are technical. You know, they're all things that can be coached up in theory. You know, and that's going to be something that that's a whole other discussion that you can have for a podcast at a later date. But all things that if you've got physical talent and you've got these God-given gifts, and all the coach has to do is try and teach some of these teachable aspects of the position, now that, you know, some of these decision makers say, Let's bring those people in, you know. And so you look at LaRaven Clark. A lot of his issues are with his hands. Sometimes he plays with a skinny base, and he can get caught off balance. I think that if you fix some of those issues, you have a guy that can be a potential very high level starter at the tackle spot. You like that he's got the tackle guard versatility as well. You know, I'll be interested to see where he ends up getting drafted. It wouldn't shock me that he goes really higher than people think. To say that this kid could go on the back end of round one is not surprising. Wow. But then I could also see teams look and say, all right, well, you know, there's a lot of issues there. You know, he could go in round three. So it'll be very interesting. A lot of the same issues that that Clark has, Ereck Flowers had. You know, coming out of Miami, he went in top 12 picks.
Top
he went 10. Top 10 picks. And he had a lot of issues with the Giants this year. So, you know, I think it'll be a very interesting case study to watch with LaRaven Clark.
All right, my second guy, I'm going to go interior line with Evan Bame from Missouri. Set the Ironman record for the Tigers' most consecutive starts. Mentally tough, played through injuries while he was there. Four-year starter, started as a true freshman, has experience at left guard and center. Was a state champion wrestler in high school. I think teams will also look at the fact that guys like Justin Britt and Mitch Morse in recent years have come in and been immediate contributors, immediate starters at the NFL level coming from Missouri. So I think that's only going to help his cause that much more.
Yeah, I like Bam a lot. And he was down at the Senior Bowl as well and thought he had a good week down there. He's at times has reminded me a little bit of the Giants' former first-round pick, Travis Frederick out of Wisconsin. I think Bam is a really intriguing player. And right there with him in my mind is my next player, and that's Max Turk, the center from USC. I think Turk is one of the best interior offensive linemen I've ever watched, and a guy who's really, really intriguing because of his movement. He started as a true freshman back in 2012 at the left tackle spot. The next year, slid into left guard, played there. The last 2 years, he's been the starting center for USC. And with his athleticism, again, another guy who's got that strength with his hands, he's got to get bigger and stronger. And again, he came in light again. He was one of the seven players that came in under 300 pounds, tore his ACL back in the fall. So there's that as well. You're going to have to deal with the rehab process, and you're projecting some of that athleticism. Since that was such of a strength of his game, can he get that back? Turk, another guy who gets after it in the run game, very, very impressive with his toughness and his ability to finish players into the dirt. Reminds me a little bit of Max Unger, who played at Oregon, was drafted by the Seattle Seahawks, and he was in the Jimmy Graham trade to the New Orleans Saints. Turk reminds me a little bit of Unger. I'm a big fan of Turk, and a guy that, again, you love that positional versatility. To be able to play a number of different spots is really intriguing.
Do you have his height, weight, what he came at? Because he's, like, especially lean for a lineman. I want to say he's, like, 6'4". And this was the projected height weight before the official measurements earlier today, but 6'4", like, I thought he was like 270s, 280s.
I'm pulling up the reported ones from today. He came in at 6'5", even.
6'5".
298, so heavier than he came in.
So he's bulked up, okay.
32.5-inch arms, so a little bit shorter arms than you want for the tackle spot, but for a guard
taller,
or center,
though.
Not bad.
It's still a taller,
yes, that's,
really
and that's,
tall.
That's why some people may not look at him as a center. You may think he's a better fit at guard. Because of that height, because some people, you know, I don't know if I'm one of them, but some people want shorter centers because you want to be able to deal with the leverage aspect of playing against some of those nose tackles that come in at, you know, 6'1", 6'2", with a guy who's 6'5", and a lot of people ask the same question about Graham Glasgow, who was at the Senior Bowl and at the Shrine Game, was here at the Combine as well.
He's 6'7"?
He's a big, tall kid, too. So another guy who's played tackle as well. So, you know, I think with both of those guys, you're probably looking at a better fit at guard for both.
You got me thinking about the medical checks they have here.
Yep.
Who was the third? I think it was a third round pick, tight end, local kid, Downingtown kid.
Tyler Croft,
who was supposed to bounce back from an ankle injury, play at Rutgers, had an ankle injury, was supposed to perform in the drills, but when the doctors were poking and prodding and checking on him, it like re-sprained the ankle and he couldn't participate in the drills. It just made me think of what the guys go through for those medical checks.
Well, and that's the thing is, you know, you talk with people around the league about this whole process, and I don't think fans realize what the players are going through. And they're only here for a couple days. You know, they come out, they show up, they go through the medical tests, but they have to get up at 4:30 in the morning. They go do the medical test. They do the psychological test for every team. They go through and do all these different things. Then they meet the media at the end of that day. So then they come in, and we're the last people they see. They'll have a couple other obligations as well. They go in, and they're doing informal and formal meetings all night. Then they have to wake up, and then they got to do tests the next day. And it's like, oh, well, you know, why did this guy – this guy was supposed to run a 4.4, and he ran a 4.5. And it's like, well, maybe it's because he got up at 4.30 in the morning. He's from West Coast, and he's waking up at 4.30 East Coast time, and it's a little tough for the transition. But it's definitely a tough week for those guys.
Next up, my last guy in our pick six, a player who former Eagle scout, NFL Network draft analyst Daniel Jeremiah absolutely raved about, and that's Ryan Kelly, the center from Alabama, a three-year starter. He took over for Barrett Jones, who's with the Eagles right now. You've got the Jeff Stoutland connection. Stats from this past season, you know, for the national champs, only one penalty all year, was never called for holding. And you look at the guys he went against, the Jerron Reeds, the A'shaun Robinsons in practice every single day, battle-tested in the SEC. You know, again, Eagles looking to get more out of the guard position next year. Don't know how if Kelly would be an immediate fit to slide over because obviously you have Jason Kelsey. But someone with that kind of background and experience, you would love to add to your roster.
Yeah, and he's certainly an intriguing player. Guy's played at a very high level for the University of Alabama for the past 2 years. I'm going to round this segment out with Joe Dahl, the offensive lineman from Washington State. We saw him at the Senior Bowl, played left tackle for Washington State, was a former left guard there, transferred from Montana, so he's walked on twice during his career. Very interesting player. It has an interesting backstory. But what I always liked about Dahl, and he initially got announced for the Shrine Game, and he was one of the first people that got announced. Went and watched him, and I thought, man, this kid should be at the Senior Bowl. He's really, really impressive because undersized, and he was one of those guys that came in with the benchmark just above that benchmark of 33 inches for arm length. He came in with 33 1/8. So, you know, maybe he got the massages and got those fingertips a little bit out there for the arm length. But a guy that really went – he's got quick feet. He's tough. He's smart. He's got to get a little bit stronger. And, again, he came in a little bit light, came in right around 300 pounds. But the way that he plays and the way that he's built remind me of Joel Bitonio, who was the former second-round pick from Nevada, went to the Cleveland Browns, was an all-rookie, I think he might have made the Pro Bowl for his rookie year for Cleveland. If not, then he was in the Pro Bowl his second year. A very impressive player. I think Dahl reminds me a little bit of Bitonio and a guy that can play tackle guard, really can get by with his toughness and grit, and a really interesting player.
All right, so coming up next, our unofficial visit. And we bring in our good friend Alex Smith. So even though he's back in Philly, he'll be part of the show. It's his interview with Washington State's Joe Dahl.
The unofficial visit.
All right, I'm here with Joe Dahl from Washington State. Joe, what's this whole draft process been like for you? And now to be here with all these coaches, all these great players, what's the whole experience been like?
I think this week has been really, really hectic, been really crazy. We've been really busy. But I think overall it's been a great honor. This is a great game. As you can see on the field, these are the best players across the country. So it's just been a great experience, and there's been some great competition out here on the field.
From the feedback that you've gotten from some of the coaches and scouts, whoever it might be, what's one part of your game that you might be trying to work on down here?
I think a huge kind of question mark is the run game. In my offensive scheme, we didn't really run the ball maybe 15, 20 times a game. We never came out of a three-point stance, really. So I think that's a huge question mark right now. And I think that as the week went on, I continue to improve at it.
For fans who may not be familiar with your game, describe yourself as a player. What do you bring to the table?
I think I'm an athletic person. I think that I play with great technique, whatever I'm taught. And then I think I'm somebody who's really consistent. I never get too high, I never get too low. I don't let my emotions control me, and I think that's the strength of my game.
Who is the best player that you personally went up against this whole season?
I think DeForest Buckner for Oregon. He's extremely talented, kind of a physical specimen. He's enormous and really athletic, and he's also got great hands, so he's a good player.
All right, thank you very much, Joe. Appreciate it. Appreciate your time.
On the clock.
All right, it's time for On the Clock, and we were just joking in between segments. I cannot say Laquon Treadwell's name for some reason. You go back to the last two podcasts when I've had to bring it up, I always find myself stumbling over
it. It's a tough one.
Yeah, so I wonder if the Eagles would use a 13th pick on him if he's there. But nonetheless, our would you rather, or on the clock is a would you rather, and we're going to go about running backs because today was a media day for the offensive line. We covered them at pick six. We're now going to cover the running backs here with a little would you rather. And Fran, you came up with the questions. So basically it's two running backs. You offer different scenarios, situations. Who would you rather have in each of these? And we'll start with this first one here. Would you rather draft Paul Perkins or CJ Procise? And this is regardless of round. So don't take round into consideration. Who would you rather have of the two?
Well, and see, here's the reason why I came up with this question. And this is really it's going to be a personal choice for everybody out there that I'll present it to.
Okay.
Because you have two very distinct skill sets with these two players. Procise is a former receiver, big kid, really, really athletic. He's explosive, and he's going to – I would venture to guess that he will test as well or better than most of the running backs here. And in terms of the agility, his burst, I would imagine his 10-yard dash is going to be better than pretty much anybody. His 40 is going to be up there with one of the best in the class. He came in at 6 foot, 220 pounds.
Yeah, he's legit good size.
He is a talented athlete. And obviously has the versatility out of the backfield. So he can do so many different things for you. At times I wondered how good of his vision was. At times I wondered how natural of a runner was. Again, though, has only played the running back position for 1 year. So a lot of room to grow there, in theory, for the position. Perkins, on the other hand, nowhere near the athlete that he is. And he's got some quickness to him. And his one of his best traits is his wiggle and his ability to make defenders miss. I really underrated his ability. Honestly, his vision, his ability to make defenders miss coming into the season, going off his sophomore tape. I was a little low on Perkins. Didn't necessarily see the hype. Man, his year this year, from what I've seen, I've watched 3 or 4 games. Really, really impressive. He had a 40-plus yard run against Stanford. He must have made 4 or 5 guys miss on the run. Really, really impressive with his ability to make defenders miss in the hole or in space. He's got good vision. He's got the ability to find small cracks in the defense and come through the other side. But unlike Procise, not explosive, not a guy that you're going to line up all across the formation. He's not going to be a 4-4 guy. He's not going to be a great agility guy. So would you rather have the patient running back with great vision, natural feel as a runner, can make guys miss and is more shifty, or that explosive, versatile weapon that you can move all around the formation? That's really the big question. Who would you rather have for this team?
First, before I give you my answer, I would love to have audio of you just reading your notes. It's almost like a bedtime story.
Well, so I'll put you to sleep.
Well, just a matter of just – it's like comforting sounds.
Wow, thank you.
You know, very paternal, so to speak. So
yeah.
the way you read them. I will go with Procise because –
because you're a Notre Dame fan.
That's first, yes. But first, the experience he brings, you know, extensive special teams, was a special teams player of the year there for Notre Dame, led the team in yards per reception in 2014 – you mentioned how he still has to learn some of the nuances of the position because he's new to it. But the size-speed athleticism combo, I think it's just too much to pass up. So you're looking for, you know, you're looking for athletes who you could teach. And I think speed and athleticism is something, obviously, you cannot teach. So I would go with Procise.
To give fans a quick perspective, you know, big picture. Procise, so I wrote down one of the guys he reminds me of is Jeremy Langford, who was a third-round pick out of Michigan State last year. Saw significant snaps for the Chicago Bears this past season with Forte on the sideline, and it seems like he might be the starter moving forward with Forte out of the picture with the Bears. Perkins has drawn comparisons to Devontae Freeman coming out of Florida State, who now obviously had a very, very productive year,
huge
for
year.
The Atlanta Falcons. So very different skill sets. Both have been very productive so far in their young careers. What kind of player are you getting there? So that's why I went with that question. So,
well, who'd you go with? You didn't give me.
Who would I go with? Me personally, I think I like Perkins a little bit more. Although I think that right away you have a definite role for Procise and what he can bring. I mean, you can plug him into an offense and know that he can offer value as a receiver and moving around the formation. Perkins, you know, I value athleticism at the running back position, but I think I value that vision and that ability to make defenders miss a little bit more.
Okay.
So that's why I think I lean Perkins there. And again, I really undersold his ability coming into the year. So that was a faux pas on my part. But next question for me. Would you rather draft Jonathan Williams or Alex Collins? So the battle of the two Razorback running backs. We talked about the offensive line there earlier in this podcast.
Of course.
You have the two runners, slightly different skill sets, again, mm-hmm. for those two players.
2014, they were the only duo to each have over 1,000 yards.
Yep.
College football. The reason I will take Collins is Williams didn't play last year with a foot injury. And I think the medical, depending on how the medical goes, that's going to play a big part. But I think that's something that you're going to have to be concerned about no matter where you draft Williams. Collins, slasher-type running back, very exciting playmaker. Just between his style of play and the injury concern that you're going to have with Williams, I'll lean toward Alex Collins.
Yeah, I think that the same comparisons can be made, and probably to a little bit less of an extent. I think that Jonathan Williams is a better athlete than Paul Perkins was coming out of UCLA. And I also think that C.J. Procise is a better athlete than Alex Collins, but very similar in that Williams is not as athletic as Collins. Collins is certainly more explosive, but I think that Williams has a much better feel of working through traffic and working with bodies around him, whereas Collins, it needs to be a little bit more defined for him up front, but is much more explosive. When you stick his foot in the ground and get downhill, he's that guy. I've compared Collins in the past to Chris Ivory because he's got that sneaky speed, but then also that physicality to run through tackles. Collins was a huge recruit coming out of high school. I think I like Williams more. Yeah, I think that I'm kind of showing my cards here as to the kind of running back I like a little bit more in terms of what translates. I think Williams, very much like Perkins, has that ability to feel his way through the briar patch as a running back, has the ability to make defenders miss. I like Williams a lot.
The briar patch is a good one. All right, next up here.
Next up. So here we go. So we're going to go, would you rather draft Derrick Henry on day two or Jordan Howard, the running back from Indiana, on day three?
I would say I went with Henry in the second day.
Okay.
If you believe that he is one of the top 30 or 35 prospects this year's draft, to get him in the first 90 picks, good value. If you believe he's truly one of those players. And like Procise, his long speed is quite impressive for someone of his size.
Yep.
So that's something, that's another thing to watch when the on-field drills take place for the running backs come Friday. With Howard, the question is going to be, he was actually asked how come he's declaring for the draft, and he said he's already got 800 touches. He's got a lot of mileage, had a major injury in high school, super productive, was very good at UAB before transferring to Indiana for his last year. But I'll lean toward Henry if you're getting a top 30 player in the second or third round.
Yeah, and I think the big question is, and you can ask this with both of these players, how much do you value athleticism at the running back position? And also, to me, you would ask, what is your offensive line like? Because I think with both of these players, you're going to need your offensive line to be able to create room for them, because I don't know how much they're going to be able to create yards for themselves. And that's an issue that I thought Henry had against some of the better defenses that he faced this year, whether it was, you know, the two bowl game, the two playoff games against Clemson and against Michigan State, whether it was against LSU or some of the other top SEC defenses Henry went up against. Then also the same could be said for Howard against some of the best Penn State defenses they went up against, or Big Ten defenses they went up against. You know, you look at the Penn State or the Ohio State game and the Michigan game. There were games where, you know, when they went up against some of these talented defenses, he was able to pick up what the offensive line created for him. And he'll run through, both guys will run through some arm tackles, but you want to be able to see the make defenders miss. And I didn't see that consistently from either. So you wonder if the guys are going to fill similar roles. Do you want how much better would Derrick Henry be with a top 90 pick as compared to Jordan Howard? And again, I kind of kept it generic there with day three. That could be a sixth round pick or it could be a fourth round pick. It's an interesting question. And to me, I think I would lean the latter. I think I would lean with Jordan Howard on day three. But
because if you're going to say anywhere in day three.
Well, of course.
Yes.
That's why it's a little bit generic. Yeah. But, you know, Henry, I'm still struggling with a little bit. And I want to see look, you could make the argument. We talked about it last week leading into the combine. Yeah. Nobody has as big of a week this week as Derrick Henry. Aced all the interviews. You know, I thought he was good, you know, with the press today. You reportedly like everything that you like of his character. Obviously was super productive. The touches you have to worry about, much like you do with Howard. Yeah. But can he be that kind of runner? Can he be that kind of feature back that can carry the load for 5, 6, 7 years? Is he going to be able to make it to that second contract playing the way he does? That's a question.
I don't know if I was crazy about either option at the end of the day here.
I would agree. I would agree with that.
But of the two, I'll go Henry, you go Howard. So right. We've disagreed on all three at this point.
Well, let's keep the Alabama discussion going here.
So the backup to Derrick Henry, Kenyon Drake or Tyler Irvin from San Jose State?
So Drake, both guys are all those movable chess piece type players. And Irvin is a little bit smaller. You know, I think he came in today. Let's see. Irvin came in at 5'10", reportedly 192 pounds. Kenyon Drake came in at 6'1", 210 pounds. So significant size difference there.
Certainly.
Tony Pauline, our friend Tony Pauline, thinks that Irvin is just going to blow the doors off the testing. And I think Drake is going to test very well too. But he thinks Irvin could run in the 4.2s. I mean, he thinks that and on tape, he's super explosive. He's really dynamic. Has the ability to win as a receiver and as a runner on those perimeter-type plays. You get that kid in space, and he can make you pay. Same with Drake, and Drake has showed it as a kick returner at the highest level.
Yes.
And he's shown he's been able to make plays in space. And but if I had to pick, you know, I think I like Irvin a little bit more. I think Irvin has a little bit better feel as a back, as a ball carrier. The question will be his size. You know, Amir Abdullah went in the second round last year. Can he go in the second round? I don't think he's as good as Abdullah was last year, but, you know, Irvin is a really intriguing player.
I will say that he came in bigger than I had thought he would.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was even going to be in the 190s. I thought he was going to be – I thought he was reportedly in the 170s.
He was listed 177 by the school's website.
Listed 177.
Yep.
So I kind of almost wrote him off from that alone. Knowing that Drake will bring explosiveness and big playability to special teams as well. I initially went with Drake, but my caveat was going to be if Irvin were to blow the doors off the combine, like Pauline says, then that's too good to pass up, especially now that he's added the weight. So if he's carrying that additional weight
and
running that fast. Yep. So initially I went Drake, but with that in mind, I would say I would have to go with Irvin as well because you're thinking, could he be the DeAnthony Thomas in Doug Peterson's offense?
Right. Let's wrap this up. I'm going to ask you one last question. This is a big one. Would you rather stand pat at running back or draft a back in the first three rounds of this draft?
I went with that if you're going BPA, best player available, I'm open to it.
Okay.
Because you look at the running backs on the roster right now, you know, DeMarco Murray's coming off the struggles he had last season. Ryan Matthews, Darren Sproles, you got to start thinking about getting youth at that position. I was excited to hear Doug Peterson talk about how he wants to use the running backs this season, that, you know, he's not going to kind of force a, you know, square peg into a round hole type of deal. He's going to work to the strengths of the running backs, and it's something he did well with Kansas City last year when Jamaal Charles went down. But I really want to see the Eagles at a running back. If there's a guy who they have rated highly and he's there for them, I'm open to it because I think you need to add some youth to the position.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very interesting debate. And I lean with you. I think that if you feel like Kenneth Dixon is a future, you know, stud and an all pro player, and he's there, you know, early third round, I mean, you got to pull the trigger. So yeah, I think that's the discussion you have to have in that situation.
Yeah, if you're looking strictly at needs, no, because you know you're gonna look at what to do with the offensive line. Now, free agency could change the perspective on, and it should change the perspective based on what the Eagles do or don't do. But at this point, I'm going to say, I'll just leave it to that. If it's, you're thinking long-term, you need some youth at the position. If it's a guy who's rated highly is there, I have no problem going for it. So with that in mind, that's going to do it for our On the Clock. Let's round things out with your questions in our draft mailbag.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, time for your question on the draft mailbag. I'm struggling through this podcast. I don't know if it's we haven't had dinner and it's getting late.
It's that.
Okay. Fran is better. Fran, okay.
Chomping at the bit.
Fran did not eat lunch today. Nice big buffet breakfast, but
I'm borderline hangry right now.
He's, yeah. You know, he's laying on the bed. I'm like sitting there like, he's, you know, between falling asleep and
I'm not falling asleep. I'm
he's hungry
starving.
The whole nine. So let's get to your questions. First one comes from Phillies Birds. Goes by at RREagles20 on Twitter. Which round will Cody Whitehair go in? And if you're looking at potentially the top interior offensive line prospect, you know, someone with the tackle experience, you figure he's got to be probably late first round pick. Most likely.
That would be my guess. Although I think for the sake of this question, I think that he might slide in around two.
Could.
Yeah.
It's very possible.
I think it's very possible. And look, anything's possible. He could go higher. I mean, he could go in the top 20 too. You know, I think that he's an interesting player. We talked about why earlier. I think Whitehair is a very intriguing player. If I were to guess, I would say late round one, early round two.
Irving Angel goes by at Irving Knack on Twitter. With D'Amico Ryans being released, does Jordan Hicks start middle linebacker? Easy answer, yes, from what Doug Pearson and Howie Roseman said.
That would be my guess. And I think the more important thing to follow that up is how big of a need is linebacker in this draft now with D'Amico Ryans out? We've talked about the need in the past. Now with D'Amico out, now you know you've got Jordan Hicks, you've got Michael Kendricks, you've got Kiko Alonso, you've got Najee Good.
And then
what do you have? And that's the big question. I think that this would be very – it's an interesting position going into this draft that not many people are talking about.
No.
Because now you can in theory, you could see a linebacker even as early as 13 if the cards fell, right?
If they really like Deron Lee.
Jalen Smith. If Jalen Smith's there and they feel good about the knee. You know, if Reggie Ragland's there, they really love Reggie Ragland. I mean, that's – it's an interesting discussion you can have.
Certainly. So definitely not one to rule out looking ahead to the draft. Next question here comes from @DatMartinezFam on Twitter. If Dak Prescott is available in the third round, would you draft him?
I think I'd wait. I mean, I've made the comparison in the past to Brett Hundley, and I think that he's probably better than Brett Hundley was. But I think I'd still wait. I think I'd wait a little bit. Hundley was a sixth-round pick last year in a weaker class. It's a stronger class in terms of the depth. I think I would wait a little bit longer on Dak Prescott.
Was it Tony Pauline who said that teams are higher on Prescott than we expect, though?
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
Tony also said the same about Hundley last year, to be fair. But, you know, I think that –
you hear the sound of the bus starting up, folks.
Yeah. You know, I just think I think that there's a lot of quarterbacks in this class that are going to get drafted in that area, and there's only so many spots to go around. You know, I think that you could make – and we've talked about the list before. All those guys that were at the Senior Bowl, there were eight guys at the Senior Bowl. There were probably two guys at the Shrine, and there were four or five underclassmen. Only so many of them are going to get drafted in the first three rounds, and it'll be tough for Prescott to be in that group.
Now, Prescott shined at the Senior Bowl, correct?
He had a good – he threw two touchdowns in the game.
He was MVP of the game, yes.
Yep.
Yes.
So, you know,
you saw him during the week of practice, so you had better –
I thought he was up and down in practice. I thought it could have been better, but it wasn't awful either.
Yeah. All right, last one. Another quarterback question comes from our good friend Wilton Houston. Who has more upside between Cardale Jones – it's a very good question – and Jacoby Brissett? Because you are a Brissett fan.
I am a Brissett fan.
You're a Brisket fan.
I'm a Brisket fan too,
but you're also a Jacoby Brissett fan.
I
this is a very tough one because there are some parts of Cardale Jones's game that are very tantalizing. You see the big arm, the big game experience.
Well, here's what it comes down to. It comes down to your definition of upside.
Okay.
I think in terms of physical upside, I think Cardale Jones has more physical upside. Arm, stronger arm, better athlete. You know, the physical upside is there. Mm-hmm. Tools are there. But when you factor in the other part of upside that I don't think a lot of people think about is that in order for you to reach that upside, you have to have some mental upside. You have to have that competitive toughness, that mental processing. You have to have the ability to be able to get better and reach that potential. And that's going to be a question. You know, the off-field and, you know, away from the game is going to be a question with Cardale Jones. And can he be that guy that's going to be that gym rat and get better and want to be better and take the, you know, learn the offense? Because, you know, what he came out of was not the most traditional offense at the college level. You know, what is Cardale Jones going to be? That's a question. And I think Jacoby Brissett played in a much more pro-style system. You know, did spend some time under center, not a ton, but spent some time under center. Mostly it was to hand the ball off, so it wasn't like he was taking 3- and 5-step drops from under center. But, you know, I think that there's a little bit more there that's easier to project.
And he's got some playmaking ability
as
well.
He certainly does. He's a big, strong kid, you know, and he has flashes as well. So, to me, that's the question is, do you feel like it's physical upside? And I think if it's physical upside, purely off tools – In a vacuum in itself, I think it's Cardale Jones in terms of upside. But when you factor it all in, I think it's Brissett.
All right. Can you get either in round three? I would think yes. Definitely yes. Get him in round three.
I think so. I would be surprised if one of those two guys went ahead of round three.
Go before that. So that's going to do it. So it's our first edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA from Indianapolis. We're going to go through Saturday night here.
Through Saturday night, we'll have one for Sunday, too.
We'll have to preview the
DBs, of course.
There you go. Gotcha. So our look at the offensive line and the running back. Special thanks to Doug Pearson for stopping by and chatting with Fran. So until tomorrow, again, make sure to rate and comment wherever you listen to our podcast. Make sure you let us know what you want to hear on it moving forward. For Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. You've been listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.